Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It is 12:45 p.m. That is Pacific Summer Time. Today is July 23rd, and one of the bigger news stories today is that Boris Johnson is going to be the next Prime Minister of the UK. One might argue that this is, in fact, when the real negotiation starts, because there is now a prospect of a hard Brexit going through. Of course, Johnson's majority in the House of Commons could potentially be reduced to a single vote. So that's obviously going to impinge upon the potential that he's going to be able to negotiate strongly with a hard Brexit alternative. But what we are definitely seeing is that the pound has rallied against the euro. And it is within a few ticks of breaking the sequence of lower rally highs. And this is the lower side of the evolving range. Well, what this is beginning to suggest, at least, is that investors had been willing to bet against the pound until the question of who was going to take over was solved. And then you have the uncertainty about just how strong the negotiating position is going to be with regard to a hard Brexit. And that is in question. So therefore, having such a strong bearish case against the pound is no longer justified. So we're starting to see it steadying against the euro, because the eurozone, well, they really do want a weaker currency when you've got these outstanding questions about the banking sector, where you have Deutsche Bank, for example, that is still trending downwards, despite the fact that it has been somewhat firmer over the last couple of days. It is now coming back to test the sequence of lower rally highs. They are talking about setting up a bad bank, and they're going to shove the huge quantities of derivatives, equity positions, private capital positions, or privately held assets into a bad bank. One would have to question what's going to be left. The answer, of course, is the bond trading business and some investment banking. It's not as if Deutsche Bank is a major force in investment banking to begin with, but they certainly know how to trade bonds. And we are still in a momentum-driven bond market, so that is perhaps where they see their trading acumen coming to the fore. But the much bigger question is, how is the company going to be recapitalized? Because when they get rid of so many assets from their balance sheet, then what's going to be left to grow with? And there is the question that has not yet been answered. What we are starting to see, though, is that investors are starting to look at Europe in a more positive light. Now, the other big piece of news in here today is that US negotiators are heading back to China to start negotiating once more with regard to the trade war. Europe has been really quite affected by the deteriorating trade fundamentals globally. But we are starting to see some movement in terms of the negotiating process. What is also, I think, rather interesting is that Daimler has taken an additional investment from China. It takes the Chinese investment in the company up to about 15%. That's generally speaking around the point where an investor might be asking for a seat at the board. They're probably going to be reluctant to do that because of the conflicts of interest. And obviously, when you've got Chinese auto manufacturers seeking seats on the board of a German manufacturer, that is also going to have national interest consequences for Germany. But it was certainly positive for Daimler in here today, and it is bouncing from the lows put in at the beginning of the year. And I think this is representative of the kind of pullbacks we've seen in not only in Germany but in Europe over the course of this year. We had a rebound in the early part of the year, and a lot of shares have given up almost the entire thing. When, for example, we think about Bayer, well, that's another example of a company that has not done a particularly good job of trying to get its well, when they took over Monsanto, they took on all of the litigation from Roundup, and that has resulted in the share, well, halving since the middle of 2017. But we are starting to see some light at the end of the tunnel here, that this share has bounced and it is now coming back to test the region of the trend mean. Well, I guess when we start to think about markets, then it is about buy low and sell high, and there is the prospect that European companies are beginning to think about buybacks. And I've done a little bit of a piece on European buybacks in here today. I would welcome any additional information if the collective has it at their disposal. I'm not really that confident in the kind of data I'm getting off the Bloomberg search engine. For example, I know that Lloyd's has been one of the bigger buyback companies over the course of the last while, but it did not pop up in my search results. So that does rather question the reliability of the search engine on Bloomberg. When we look at the UK banking sector, well, obviously Brexit is very much front and center, but then of course the UK banks are also dealing with a very low interest rate environment. But we are seeing that it is firming within its range and it is back above its trend mean. Well, this has been an incredibly volatile trading environment for UK banks over the course of the last decade. But we do have now evidence of a higher reaction low, provided the low put in at the beginning of this year in fact holds. So there is the potential that we could be looking at the kind of catalysts that could potentially start to turn around growth in the Eurozone. The FTSE 250 index has firmed over the course of the last week, and it is now coming back up towards this psychological 20,000 level. But more importantly than that is that it has held this higher low, and it really did need to hold the lows put in June, and so far it has done that. This has been a rather choppy uptrend over the course of the last decade, and there is, I think, a clear willingness among investors to look at it and think, well, you can buy the dips, that whenever it pulls back in a very pronounced manner, that it has been a buying opportunity. The problem with persisting in that kind of view is that one will be buying into the eventual top. So we need to pay attention to what's going on in terms of the broader market. But so far, this action is pretty encouraging. When we think about the dollar and the euro, well, the euro was in negative territory in here, down 60 ticks, and that is a very clear breakdown. When we look at this trend, there has been a sequence of lower rally highs since the beginning of 2018. There is no country wants a strong currency, but some do need a weaker one more than others, and Europe is very much in that category. Then we look at what's going on in terms of the yen. It was also in negative territory in here today. Here's the dollar rallying against it. Well, when we look at the Nikkei, it did need to bounce, and over the course of the last three sessions, it has bounced from the 21,000 level. Well, that's another higher reaction low. When we then look at the second section index, it really had, it does need to push back above the trend mean, but there is the potential now that we are also seeing a higher reaction low here. If it can sustain a move above the trend mean, and I think most particularly back above the 7,000 level, then we can start to think about recovery in Japan. Well, the fact that both Europe and Japan are starting to look a little better on the back of the weakness of their respective currencies, well, that does rather ask the question about the relative strength of the dollar. And the most important point here is that it has now broken the sequence of lower rally highs since June. And when we think about it in those terms, then the clear message here is that it has found support in the region of the trend mean, and we're going to need a clear countermanding downward dynamic in order to question that this isn't a resumption, or at least we're not going to see a sorry, I should stop speaking in double negatives. It looks likely that we're going to see a retest of the recent peak in the dollar index. And a clear downward dynamic would be required to really question that potential, or indeed the potential for a break higher. If that's the case, then we should start to see some consolidation in the precious metals, and gold was down $8 in here today. It has been, it was only down a couple of cents at the beginning of the day, but since the dollar has started to rally, then that has had an impact on the precious metals. I continue to think, though, that the dollar's ability to rally is highly contingent on the willingness of the US administration to tolerate a strong currency. Therefore, the big question is going to be just how much is the Federal Reserve going to cut interest rates? And then, of course, we have the fact that they're going to stop reducing the size of the balance sheet in September. The most important thing for gold is that it holds the breakout. When you get a base formation completion like we've just seen, it is quite normal to see a first step above the base, and that could contribute to a ranging phase. And the range has only persisted for a few weeks so far. We could be in for multiple months of ranging, and that would eventually allow the moving average to catch up. The most particular, I think the most important point, though, is that it needs to hold the breakout, and that would really be defined as holding the move above the $1,350 area. It doesn't necessarily mean that we couldn't dip down back below it, but there is the scope that we could see some more volatility. That is almost normal when we're talking about gold, that it is not customary for breakouts to be sustained. That's why I think it is probably likely we are going to see some volatility, and the real proof of the pudding will be in its ability to, in fact, sustain that move. What is interesting, though, is silver was relatively unchanged in here today and has been able to unwind the earlier weakness. Well, silver has lagged, and it has only in the last week started to move in a more dynamic manner. It has clearly broken the sequence of lower rally highs, and it is bouncing from the lower side of what is effectively a 5-year base formation. As long as it is holding the move above the trend mean and the trend mean continues to start to turn upwards, then we can continue to give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. Well, the other hedge that people have been looking at is Bitcoin. But Bitcoin held the $10,000 area in here today, and the most recent dynamic has been on the upside. This continues to look like a period of consolidation following what was a very impressive advance from the breakout in April. It really would be the most ideal scenario if it holds the 10,000 level, but of course that is wishful thinking until we in fact see it. If this trend is going to remain consistent, the $9,000 area will hold. If it fails, then we're going to be in a much more volatile trading environment. And I think when we think about oil prices, well, that's an example of what we might anticipate from something like Bitcoin. When the rhythmically trending environment does roll over, then we move into a much more volatile trading phase. And oil prices today were in a little bit of positive territory, up 78 cents. This continues to look like a range, but there's an overall downward bias to trading. And that's against a background where geopolitical tensions continue to rise. But I think one of the more important points, the thing that is not getting enough of airplay in here, is that with lower commodity prices, that there is the potential that that is going to stoke economic growth. And that's the forward-looking way of thinking about things, that the lower prices go, the greater the likelihood is that somebody will find some use for lower-priced commodities and start to engage in some enterprising activity. Well, the continuous commodity index is back testing the 400-point level, and now the bigger question is whether it can sustain a move back above that trend mean. When we look at perhaps some of the soft commodities, well, soybeans has been ranging here around the region of the trend mean and the upper side of trading over the course of the last year. Now the big question is whether this level around the 900 cent area is going to hold. One thing that is I think supporting the outlook for the soft commodities, particularly the grains and beans, has been the very wet spring in the Midwest and now crushing heat wave, which is not particularly good for rain sodden fields that are trying to that where farmers are trying to get some form of planting done. Corn prices have been consolidating above the I guess more or less above this $4 area. And what is I think particularly interesting here is that we generally tend to get new crop right around this time of the year. So the fact that we have prices sustaining this break, that's I think suggestive of the potential that we are going to have a supply constrained situation later this year. And as long as the move above $4 is confirmed, then we have to start thinking that there is potentially going to be a higher commodity price environment further out in the year. I'm posting an article, well, it's a report in here today from the Bank of International Settlements, and they're talking about if you look back at hundreds of years of history and various different cycles rather than simply the post-war period, that a very old population and a fall off in a young population does tend to lead to inflationary pressures eventually. And we are seeing that in a number of developed markets. So their conclusion is that inflation has not been banished, but rather that it is eventually going to start to rear its head once more. Well, we don't have to think too hard about exactly what would need to happen for inflation to start to come back and be a more relevant consideration. It's modern monetary theory. Now, when we think about government bond yields, well, we've had two 30 basis point rallies in the yield over the course of this year so far, and the one that's going on right now has been limited to about 20 basis points. So it could persist for a little while longer, and we may see yields contract somewhat, not least because I think investors are beginning to come around to the idea that earnings are really not all that bad, that there is the real potential that the massive inventory build that occurred last year has been responsible for the fall off in trucking demand in the first half of the year. If that starts to pick up again in the third and fourth quarters, well, then the growth scare that has really factored into the way people have been thinking in the first half of this year will fall, I think, outside of short-term memory. The S&P 500 is back above the 3,000 level in here today, and so far there has been a distinct absence of volatility. Despite the fact that investors are not really willing to believe that this breakout is going to hold, and not least because there is a short-term overbought condition. But it has held, and as long as that remains the case, well, then this remains a bull market environment. Now, I have had a number of questions asking about the fact that I've been talking more about a 1,000-day moving average, and I think what is particularly relevant is a 200-day moving average is really useful during big trending phases. But we also need to have something to think about in terms of the occasional medium-term correction, because every single secular bull market is going to be punctuated by occasional medium-term corrections. And so far, within this trend since 2009, there have been three, and each of them has lasted about a year and a half. So when we see wide overextensions relative to the trend mean and losses of consistency, then that has to make us alert to the potential that we're going to get a reversion back towards at least the 200-day moving average. But then there's also the potential that every 2 years there's probably going to be a 1.5 year consolidation or a hiatus. Then we're going to have a deeper pullback. And we have to have at least some idea about, well, how much of a deeper pullback is normal in terms of the consistency of the trend. Well, so far, and it was certainly the case in the bull market, it's probably better if I put it on a log scale. It was certainly true in the bull market in the 1990s that a 1,000-day moving average was an appropriate way to look at it. Well, so far this is a daily chart. Well, I think if we're going to look at months, then it's going to be a 60-month on Bloomberg, but it would still be 1,000 days on the chart library. And when we look at a 60-month moving average, then it has been eerily reliable in terms of the extent of medium-term corrections within the context of secular bull markets. So we've just had another bounce from the 1,000-day moving average, and we've had a bounce from the region of the trend mean, the 200-day moving average, in just the last month. So these are two different moving averages that give us some insight both on the medium term and the very long term perspective. That's why I've introduced some commentary on the 1,000-day moving average, because there is a tendency during these medium term corrections, when supply and demand do come back into balance, that people worry about the bearish prognostications. They worry about top formation development. And not without good reason, because there has been an enormous amount of commentary about an inverted yield curve. I've been at pains to highlight that the inverted yield curve has only been apparent in different parts of the curve, and not in the classic 10-year and 2-year. In fact, the 10-year and 2-year has been bobbing around for most of the last few months. It was up as high as 27 basis points quite recently, and it's currently around 23 basis points. Eventually, that will become inverted, and then I think we do need to be alert. We do know that we've had a growth scare. This is almost textbook in terms of the US presidential cycle to have a growth scare in the first half of the 3rd year of the US presidential cycle. And now we're starting to see that monetary policy is starting to ease. Trade negotiations are back on. Now, I'm not holding out a great deal of hope for trade negotiations to come up with a magic answer to the deteriorating relationship between the USA and China. But markets are at least willing to give the benefit of the doubt to jaw-jaw instead of war-war. And now we have the scope for additional upside in stock markets. I do think that we are at the point in the cycle where we're going to get a bounce in terms of additional monetary and fiscal easing on a global basis, that commodity prices have the potential to start to do better from here, and that would be in response to increasing demand, and demand would be representative of a trough in global growth. So there is the scope here for a turnaround in terms of perceptions. And that could potentially take us all the way through to the election in 2020. Well, that would suggest that we're in for another leg on the upside in stock markets. And I think as long as these breakouts hold, and most particularly as long as the region of the 200-day moving average is holding, then we can give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. The recovery that we're seeing in the precious metals is a direct response to the potential that with all of the monetary and fiscal stimulus that we are going to have an inflationary outcome, that the devaluation on a wholesale basis of fiat currencies is supporting the argument for why one would hold precious metals. That isn't about to go away just because the dollar has gone up on a couple of days in a row. The USA is as interested in any as any other country in trying to devalue its currency in order to meet some of the debt obligations that it is accruing. So, I think with that, I will leave it for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.